Good morning, everyone. Okay, so we're going to start on Daled Amud Beis with the Mishnah of Hamakavis Chaver. Now, just a brief introduction. So we're still in the world of property subdivisions, and we're going to discuss exactly what that is requiring of us in this context in just a couple of minutes. But this sugya is going to take us a little bit of time because there's two components to it. There's the Mishnah and analyzing what the halacha in the Mishnah is. And then there's another story that the Gemara cites as seemingly a proof text for how to interpret the Mishnah and practically in terms of what the halacha should be in such a case. And how that tracks with the Gemara that we read is somewhat of a challenge in understanding both the Gemara and the story. So there are numerous different halachim in the Rishonim that we're going to look at. We're not going to look at all the details of all of them. We're going to try to boil them down into two or three of the main ones. But in order to do that, we're going to have to first see through the whole Gemara and then go back and start to parse exactly where the tensions are and what the underlying principles are. So today we're just going to try to get down the Shaklatar of the Gemara, get down the general principles that are here, and at least maybe highlight some of the places where there are uncertainties. But we're not going to really address any of the core components of what the Machlokas is between the Mahalchim and the Rishonim just yet. First, we're just going to organize. Okay, so let's get started. Hamakif es chaviru mishalosh ruchosav. If somebody surrounds his friend's field from three directions, okay? So just minastam, and as we're going to see, this is a subject to great debate in the Rishonim, right? What is the organization of both these fields and where the fence is, right? Makif means that you put up a fence, right? You've surrounded, so you build a wall, right? Aram mukafas choma, right? From Yoshua ben Nun, from the Gemara and Megillah, right? So it means to surround. So the question, of course, is going to be what the diagram is. Now, if I had a whiteboard, I would draw the different, maybe I'll try to come up with sheets for next time. But the standard state assumption of the Gemara, when somebody says, Hamakif Sadosa Mishal Shrikosav, Hamakif Chaver Mishal Shrikosav, it means that you have a box here in the middle. I own all the land around you, and I don't really want to have to deal with you. So I build a wall on this border of my property, on this border of my property, and on this border of my property. So I've boxed you in on three sides. Right? That's what it means. The standard state. V'gadar es harishona v'es hashniyah v'es hashlishis. Right? And I put up a fence on this property line, on that property line, the third one. Right? So I have three now. On three of the four property lines, I now put up three fences. Ein mechayvin oso, says the Mishnah. You cannot be mechayev him, presumably the person who owns the inside field, to pay for the fence that you put up on the three sides of his field. Right? Now, obviously, question number one is going to be, why not? Right? Why would I have thought that I could make him pay? And why am I not making him pay? Right? Why can I not? So that's one question we're going to have to try to figure out. But just for a moment, hold that. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Im amad v'gadar asaravias, if he stands up and builds the fourth fence, meaning presumably on the fourth side, milgalgalin alav es hakol, he has to pay for everything. So who's he talking about? Presumably the inside guy, right? So if we're going to make, because Megal Levas HaKol, right, we just said that the Tanakhama Mishnah said you can't make the inside guy pay anything. Ein Mechayven Oso, seemingly you don't pay him, he doesn't pay anything. And then once the fourth wall is built, you can make the inside guy pay for all of it. Okay, all of what? All of all four walls? All of the fourth wall? Okay, and who built the wall? Who put up the fourth wall? Is it the outside guy? Is it the inside guy? Does it matter? Right? These are some of the uncertainties in the Mishnah. So the Gemara is going to try to parse each of these problems. Now, once we do that, we're going to have to go back and try to reread a different approach into the Gemara because it's not clear, depending on which of the, and you'll see there's four or five different ways that the Gemara tries to interpret the Mishnah. It's not clear, first of all, which is the right one. And even if we settle on the right one, it's not clear to us what the reason that that's the right one is in context of the Mishnah and the way the Gemara analyzes it. Which is why there is such a great debate in the Rishonim as to what the proper understanding of this sugya is, which will then impact how we explain the halacha l'maisa on the next top of the next amud when we get to the story of Runya. So,
is there a concept of an easement? So the guy who's surrounded, you know, isn't stuck and can't move out of his property?
There is a concept of an easement, and that's 100% true. There is one. The Mishnah says in Mefureshes, in the fourth parak of Avasra, it's required. Saying if I'm to own a field that is surrounded on all sides by somebody else's property, by definition, he must provide me with an access road. Talachli obligated. However, we're not talking about access to the field. We're talking about building a wall. So recall that there are at least there are a number of reasons that one might be either required to or engaged to build a wall, between his and his neighbor's property, right? At least one that comes to mind that we've just been talking about is Hezek Ria, right? Which is, by the way, the choice approach to the sugya is to analyze it through the lens of Hezek Ria, as of Rashi, as well as the Baal HaMaor. The problem is that as anybody who's ever learned the Baal HaMaor knows, that if you've ever learned the Baal HaMaor, whenever the Baal HaMaor has an approach, it's almost always shot down by at least two Rishonim, because both the Ravid and the Ramban wrote entire books that were simply designed just to explain why the Baal HaMaor was an Am Haaretz. Now, the Baal HaMaor was far from an Am Haaretz. He was a master Talmud Chacham, but he was also 18, and he was a little bit of a punky kid. And therefore, the Ramban and the Ravid did not take kindly to somebody attacking the Rif and the way the Rif understood the Gemara. So even though the Baal HaMaor oftentimes has an approach that is, well, novel and creative, and maybe also a little bit out there, it's almost never the way that we approach the halacha. However, it's a fascinating approach. Rashi, though, again, it doesn't go as far as the way the Baal HaMaor puts it into the Gemara, so we'll see how those two differ probably next week. But Hezek Ria is definitely one of the models. There are other models as well that we're going to talk about.
The reason I ask the question is really more to the, what then practically is the difference between, if I think of like it's just a string. So the string can be like this, and that's what we spoke about at the beginning of the parrot, or the string can be sort of like this, which is what we're talking about now.
Right.
So it's just a question of separating the two properties.
So there's a couple of different ways to think about it, but at least one of the other issues that comes up, at least in the way we've shown him understand it, the Ramban is a big proponent of this. Tosus has maybe a different way of thinking about it, is that you need to protect your field from damage. Saying if you have a field of trees, of wheat stalks, whatever it is that you're growing, so you don't just leave it open to animals and people to come in and take whatever you want. You put up a fence. Saying to keep your security.
That's precisely my point.
But it's not. It can't just be a string. Meaning, it's not just a demarcation line.
I don't mean a string. I don't mean a string in the sense of a string.
What
I'm
you,
saying the dividing line. What's right? The difference of a dividing line that simply just splits it in half or just surrounds it?
So I say that, and that's the point. Meaning, think
all
about.
All I'm saying is, why would we treat it any?
Good. So the Gemara,
exactly.
So the core. So depending on what the approach is that we're going to take in analyzing the Gemara, there's going to be a distinction between surrounded on three sides versus on four sides, no matter which one we look at, right? And I say just to play them out for the two that we talked about, right? So far we've mentioned Hezek Ria. We talked about protecting from actual damage, right? So if it's Hezek Ria, so if I only surround you on three sides and I then put up a fourth wall, so now you're protected on all sides. There's no Hezek Ria. But if I take down the fourth wall, right, only on three sides, then it doesn't matter that I can't see from this direction because I could just walk around and I could see directly in, right? So in other words, you're not really getting any benefit from that. If it's about protection, okay, so if on three sides, well, it's wide open on the fourth side. So what protection did you get? If I put up the fourth wall, now you're fully protected, right? And for every mahalach that we create in trying to understand this Gemara, right, that's going to be the core distinction, is that three doesn't do much, four does everything. So does that mean that you go back and you reassess how much you would owe for three, because clearly it's necessary as part of four? Or is the fourth separate from the other three? Or is it that nothing happens until the fourth is built? How do we view the progression of this story? And that's also part of the question.
And maybe I'm going back on another way to say it. In the first Mishnah that we did, we assumed that the wall that was put up to completely separate both parties' lands from each other.
Yes.
And it wasn't just put up partially, or it wasn't even a situation where there were two or three sides that were...
Correct. But remember what kind of a land we were talking about there. We're talking about a chatzer, right? Which is essentially your private backyard.
Right.
Here we're talking about your fields. Like, this is by definition what the Mishnah there called a bika, which is a makam shlo nagu ligdar, right? Meaning fences for privacy does not seem to be the operating concern for the people who own these fields.
Right.
So, which is part of the reason why Rashi / the Baal HaMaor's approach to the whole sugya is so challenging. It's because, like, the whole previous Mishnah was designed to point out that this fence has nothing to do with Hezek Ria. So how are you going to try to interpret the Gemara according to Hezek Ria? Right, that's going to be one of the core weaknesses in Rashi's Pshat. Right, there are other weaknesses in the other Pshatim, as we're going to see. Most of them are not internal to the logic of this particular piece of Gemara, but rather because the Gemara in Bava Kamma, as we're going to talk about, uses this Gemara as a proof for some other concept, and totally changes the way that we would have interpreted this Gemara in order to make that proof. So how you then plug that back into our actual Gemara becomes a major problem. So we're gonna get to all these complications. This is one of the more complicated sugyas in the first parak. So bear with me. So here we go. Let's take a look at the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha Kerav Yosi. Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel says Halacha Kerav Yosi. The Amar Vegadar Servius Vegadlan of Asakol. Halacha Kerav Yosi. He builds the fourth wall. You make the middle guy, inside guy, pays for everything. Loshna amad nikaf, loshna amad makif. It does not matter whether the person who was being surrounded, i.e. the person who owns the middle field, built the fourth wall, or whether the surrounder, meaning the person who owns the outside land, built the fourth wall. Once the fourth wall is built, the inside guy must pay for all of it. Now, what does all of it mean? Not all of it, it's half of it, right? Because you're never going to be mechayev a guy to pay for more than half of a wall that he shares with someone else, right? That we know already from the previous sets of sugyas that we've covered, right? So megalgal es hakol, right, means es hakol that he'll be chayev to pay, right? It doesn't mean the full value of all four walls, right? Fine. Itmar, Rav Huna Amar, Rav Huna says, hakol lefi ma shegadar. What does it mean that we make him pay? It's whatever the cost of the fence is. Meaning we look at what the four walls are. So each wall is a very expensive wall, right? Let's say he made the wall out of gazis or gvil. It's very expensive stuff, right? Six tefachim thick. It's very, big stones. It's good stuff, right? It costs a lot of money. So you have to pay a lot of money. You have to split a lot of money halfway. Whatever the fence was, that's what the inside guy has to pay half of. Chia barav amar hakol lefi demekanim bezol. Nope, you don't have to pay the value of the actual wall that was put up, but you find the cheapest kind of a fence that would be appropriate, and that we are willing to that's what he has to pay half of. He has to pay according to the value of a cheap reed fence, a plank fence, right? The Home Depot fence. Okay, that's the Gemara's machlokus. Now the Gemara's going to try to understand the Mishnah in light of this approach. Tanakh. Hamakiv chaver mishlo shechosa v'gadar tzrishon v'seshniyav v'seshlishis ein mechayiv noso. You're not mechayiv for the first three walls. Haravias mechayiv noso. Right, what's the implication of telling me that you're not mechayev for the first three? That when the fourth one comes, you would be chayev, right? I don't need to tell you one, two, and three you're not chayev for, if not to specifically highlight that when we get to number four, then you would be chayev. So clearly, the implication is that you're chayev. Okay, now the Gemara has a problem. Ema Seifa, second half of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Mamanu, Gadar, Sravias, Megal, Nos, Hakol. Okay, so then why did I need the first half of the Mishnah? Right, that's the Gemara's implied question. So Bishlama L'Rav Huna, that makes sense according to Rav Huna that I need both in the Mishnah. Da'amar Hakol Lefima Shagadarba, right? Because it depends on what the quality of the wall is. So Hainu De'iko B'Tanakam of Rav Yossi. That's why the Mishnah, even though I don't need Rav Yossi to tell me they're going to pay for the fourth wall, right, or they pay for all of them, that should have been, the implication is obvious in the Mishnah, but that's the different distinction between Tanakam and Rav Yossi. Right, Tanakama B'Tanakam of Rav Yossi. Tanakama is over Hakol Lefima De'ikonim B'zol. Tanakama thinks that you don't pay for the first three walls, and then when the fourth wall goes up, you pay for only the cheap stuff. In umashe gadar lo, and the quality of the fence, no, because we don't care that he put up a fence. From Yossi Savar, I call it umashe gadar. It depends on what the quality of the fence is that the guy put up. Whatever the makif put up, so the nikav has to pay half of that value. And that's Rabbi Yossi's chiddush, meaning everybody agrees that you have to pay something once there's four walls. Right? That the Tanakama even said that, and that's why the implication of the way you read the first half of the Mishnah is Rishona Shnia Shlishis in Mechayv Noso. Revius, Mechayv for everything. Okay, what's the definition of everything? So Rabbi Yossi specifically highlights the everything to mean everything that was expended on the wall. Whereas the Tanakhama would say, no, only what the cheapest fence you could have put up, whatever you could have gotten away with. That's what you're Mechayv.
But in both cases, the full wall at that point. In other words, once you complete number four, it's
yes,
retroactive to what you've done forever.
At this point in the Mishnah, that's what we're saying. As we're going to see, the Gemara is maybe going to walk that back a little bit. But for now, we're assuming that. El Lechia Barav, but according to Lechia Barav, Da'amar HaKol Lefim Demei Kanim Bezol, that the whole thing is going according to whatever the cheap stuff is, meaning everybody just pays, you only have to ever pay the cheap stuff, even after the fourth wall, even according to Rabbi Yossi. So my Iko Beitanakam Rabbi Yossi. What's the difference? Right? Everybody agrees. Id Demei Kanim Bezol, Lo Kayavle, if you're not going to give him the cheap value, so then what's he paying? I mean, there's no chiddush then. So you buy his ema. So here's one answer. Agar netira ika benai. Answer number one, the Gemara says to this problem, according to Chia Barav, that you would normally have to pay only the cheapest value of a fence, is agar netira, which is the value of actually protecting your field. Hiring a watchman, right? The cheapest way to protect your field is not to build an infrastructure wall. It's to hire a guy.
And one other question.
Yeah.
Being built, is that an hasgamah between the two of them, or is that...
Excellent question. We don't know yet. Saying, again, now, the reason why the Gemara says at the very beginning, loshna makif, loshna nikaf, might be to say that we don't care. Right? So it might be that the presumption is that there is no Haskama. But as we're going to see, that's actually a core element, because when we look at the next part of the Gemara in the story of Runya, who is this guy that has a field inside of, I think, one of the Amoraim, and they're trying to figure it out. So it's not so clear if there's a Haskama, and that's part of the uncertainty in how to pass an Halacha. Meaning, in a vacuum, it's easy to say, yeah, they agreed, they didn't agree, it's obviously beneficial, it's not obviously beneficial. But when we're on the ground trying to assess whether this is really needed, and whether the person who's inside really wants this, that's part of the question. Now, just to make it a little more complicated, right? I told you that the standard assumption of the Mishnah is that, right, this is the inside field, right? I have fields all around your field, and then I'm building a wall around your field directly. However, the Ramban, as we're going to see, we're going to look at this much more in depth later, the Ramban actually thinks that the Pshat in the Gemara is very different. He says it has nothing to do with building a fence on this wall. But he has a whole different model of understanding Gemara, which is why we'll talk about it differently. But he actually says that you're not building a wall on the fence line. Your field is here. I have fields all around you, and surrounding all of my fields around here is Rishus Rabbah. And I embark on a major capital project to build a fence around my entire property to protect from the public entrance into my property. Now, by definition of me putting up a fence on all four of my property lines, I have now also protected yours. Now, I'm not specifically protected from my property against the outside guy's property, right? Inside versus outside is not protected, but inside against the Rishus HaRabim is very much protected, which now puts, essentially, Hezekriah back on the table, right? Because Hezekriah in a Bikka against Rishus HaRabim might, in fact, actually be an operative concern, which is why this gets very complicated, because...
But Hezekriah presumably has to have Re'iah.
Correct. So now that there's four walls on all sides, I can't see into the middle guy's property.
Yeah, but it could be Texas. You know, that
could be.
It could be 10 miles.
It could be. And then you could make the argument, and then you'd say, okay, there's no Hezekriah, it's too far, whatever. Right? But in principle, if that's the actual case of the Mishnah, then the whole analysis is going to have to change. Right? And then the operative concern of the Gemara of why you would have to pay in the first place is going to have to change. Right? Right now, we're working somewhere in the between of I'm damaging you, you're damaging me just by dint of our proximity, which is what we call Hezekriah, or in the simple state, or more likely, which is why the Gemara is offering this Agar Netira business, it's about protecting my property from damage, physical damage. Agar Netira. So normally I would either put up a scarecrow or I would hire a guy to chase off the wild animals and chase off any poachers, right? So instead you build a wall for me. Shkoyach. Great. So the Gemara is saying, what's the difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi? Tanakama would have said, no, you don't have to pay for the actual value of the fence. Because I would have said, I don't want to build a fence. I'm going to hire a guy. I'm going to hire a guy, right? We have security, right? So we'll hire a security guy. No. It's not so expensive. It's not crazy. So I'll hire a guy. It's cheaper than building a new infrastructure project. So we'll do that. So the Gemara says, okay, that's Tanakama. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you have to pay for at least the value of a fence because the guy put up a fence. Now, why does that matter? Right? Who cares? Right? If at the end of the day, the whole fence is to protect, so then why do I care that he put up a fence? I could have done it in a cheaper way, which I should be entitled to do. So that's part of the challenge in this answer, which is why the Gemara offers another interpretation. As we're going to see, there are numerous ones. So let's keep going. Right, so you buy same agar netira kibinayu, Tanakama savar agar netira in the mekanim bezol lo, Rabbi Yossi savar to mekanim bezol. Right, and the weakness in that is, right, our analysis doesn't really hold up if you're telling me that the whole purpose of the wall is for protection, because then there's no reason why Rabbi Yossi should say that just because there's four walls here, I should not be mechuyev to pay the value of any wall. Right, saying there's no reason for Rabbi Yossi to say that, which is the inherent weakness in this Gemara, in the answer of this Gemara. So now the Gemara is going to try to give another teretz. V'ibayis ema, okay, give you another teretz. V'shono shniyav v'shlish tzikah b'nai. Teretz number two to this problem in the Gemara, right, of what the chiddush is if everybody agrees that the Tanakhama is talking about the Nekan and Bezol, right? So what's the distinction between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi? The first three walls. Tanakhama savar revias hu diyayav lei. Ava rishona shniyav u'shlishis lo yayav lei. Tanakhama says you only have to pay for the value of the fourth wall, right? But not the first three. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Rishona Shnia Ushlishis Nami Yavle. You have to pay for all three. Okay, so what's the weakness in that answer? Just at face value. Right? So this is the simple way of reading the Mishnah. In fact, this was the Tiyuk of the Gemara Lechatchila. Right? This is our whole Sugya got started because the Gemara made this very implication, right? This inference. It says, Rishona Shnia Ushlishis, Ein Mechayven Oso. Therefore, the fourth wall, you're Mechayven. So the simple reading would mean for the fourth wall alone. So what's the weakness in this? That the Gemara is gonna did not offer this first, and second that the Gemara is about to essentially reject this and offer a third answer, right? Why not?
Because you're getting three walls also.
Oh, so you said the key word, which is that you're getting benefit. So the problem with the problem with what you're saying is that you're already assuming that the Gemara in this answer thinks that the core reason that you're chayev to pay anything is because of hana'ah,
yeah.
Because there's some benefit that you're getting. What if I told you that that's not the reason at all? What if I told you it's procedural? You built three walls around my field. Mm-hmm. And then you take me to court. And you say, listen, I put up these three walls. And I want to be paid for half of what I put up. And the court says, well, there's no reason that we can be mechayev you. Because it's a bikka. There's no minug. There's no makom.
We learned the last Gemara.
There's no reason that we can be mechayev you. Farshtetach in the Mishnah. Ain't mechayev no so. Can't make you pay. Okay, so you go home and you lose. Now, again, remember that the Gemara at the very top here said it doesn't matter who puts up the fourth wall. Let's say I go up on the Nikaf, just to make it simpler. I go up and I put up the fourth wall. So now what? You're going to come back to Basin and say what? You're going to say, this Laufer idiot, what do you do? He put up the fourth wall. Obviously he wants all four walls. I want to be paid. Basin's going to tell you, I'm sorry, procedurally, you already came to us with a Shaila on the first three walls and we ruled he doesn't have to pay. So you're in tight. Nothing we can do about that. Now, that is a very, very creative way of understanding this answer. It's the Bala Mo'or's explanation, and it's taught in a sugya called Kam Dina Vahadar Dina. Now, Kam Dina Vahadar Dina is not the sugya that we're going to focus on, but I'm only raising it because it's very far out there, but it actually makes a lot of sense when you think about the way these things play out, because what the Bala Mo'or, and again, we're going to look at the Bala Mo'or more in depth probably next week because we're already running out of time, but the way the Bala Mo'or is trying to think of the Gemara is in context of the next story in the Gemara where this is actually part of the problem. Because it's not clear how the procedure went down when the two guys were fighting about it in front of the Beis Din. And that's why he goes out of his way to try to reinterpret this answer to try and make that Gemara fit. So keep that in mind. But the just stepping out a second for a moment, the principle of kam dina v'hadar dina is what happens when Beis Din rules on a question that has already come in front of them, and then new evidence comes up later that sheds light on something that the Beis Din already ruled on. Now, not where the Beis Din made a mistake, but where the facts have now changed in the case. So that's the machlokas in the Gemara about whether we pass in Kam Dina, which is once Beis Din rules, it's locked in, nothing you could do about it, or Hadar Dina, the Beis Din is allowed to undo their psak and revisit once new evidence comes to light. Now, we generally pass in Kam Dina, except that there's a lot of exceptions to when we pass in Kam Dina. So in practice, it's really like sometimes we say Kam Dina, and sometimes we say Hadar Dina, and it really depends on the intricacies and details of the case in front of you, which is so far beyond our case and our sugya right now. That's a Sanhedrin case in the first parak. It's not for us right now. It's in the middle of the beginning of Hoshe Mishpat, like a Simin Yudalit or something like that. It's where the discussion of Kam Dina Hadar Dina comes up. But it's not our conversation. But just be aware that procedurally, that's part of what the Gemara might be offering here. And again, that's how the Bala Mo'or interprets it. The Ramban has a different interpretation. We'll get to it. But as you're already seeing, with each line of the Gemara, depending on what the operating principle you want to work with, the lens you want to use, is going to change your analysis for every possibility in the Gemara.
But why aren't we using just some of the tools we already learned in the first Gemara? Like, you know, what's the minhag of the area? And
there's no minhag, it's a bikka.
And what's the materials that are being used?
Ah.
Was it built on just your side? Was it built splitting in the middle? In other words, we had all these tools
correct.
That we had already accumulated.
So,
by the way, I knew the answer on the bikka side. But
right, no, understood. So I'm saying the Rishonim, the reason why most of the Rishonim don't do that is because they don't even want to entertain it. They treat these two as unrelated simply because it's a bikka, there's no minhag. So if this is a bikka, there's no minhag, so then I don't care about your building code minhagim. Meaning, I don't want to hear about your gavil, your gazis, your avanim. Now, it happens to be that the Rama cited by the Rabbeinu, by the Ran in the back of the Gemara. So, was it the Miuki Yosef in Bavash? I think it's the Miuki Yosef. Whoever cites it on the commentary on the Rif, so he quotes the Rama who actually tries to go with that route. But again, it's an awkward fit. So, like I said, there's at least 10 different versions of how to read this Gemara in the Rishonim. I'm going to try to pick the three major ones, but every possibility that you're going to highlight is already talked about by the Rishonim, but none of it is so clear that that's the answer. Meaning everything is like, well, yes, but if you choose this one, so that means you're sacrificing on this end. And of course, the problem is that, so if you're a theoretician, so then that's great, because it doesn't really matter what, you know, which one you end up picking, you can explain however you want. But at the end of the day, what we're going to see is the Gemara is trying to give you a halacha, right? Sometimes the Gemara doesn't tell you what the bottom line is, but the Gemara is going to come at the end and say, tachlis, this is what the psak is, which means that you then have to go and plug it back into your analysis. And it doesn't really fit for anyone. Not any of the mahalchim fits perfectly. It's all going to be a little bit like, you have to shove it in there a little bit. You gotta you know, stuff the edges in because it doesn't quite fit. So that's going to be the challenge in picking of the mahalchim, which one explains the halacha that the Gemara chooses at the end of the day to fit neatly into the sugya.
And I'm sorry to keep asking the question.
No, bring them on.
Is it unusual for two Mishnahs that are just really right next to each other to somehow go off into these different directions when the subject matter is so similar?
Nope, not unusual at all. Happens all the time. Sometimes you'll have Mishnahs that are back-to-back that are directly contradictory. You'll have one Mishnah where the halacha is, where it seems to be identical, and the halacha is in opposite directions. Happens all the time. Part of the, Rabbi Shechner has a very long series on why you Torah, if you want to listen about the development of Torah Shabbat Peh. But one of the things that Rabbi Shechner is fond of saying is that the way that the Gemara was developed was as a system of forcing you to engage thought. So it's not designed as an organized system of thought. It's designed to force you to think it through. So part of the reason why there's oddities placed in, like, well, that's weird, is specifically because, well, when you say that's weird, that spurs a thought, which will force you to engage the question of, well, okay, so why is that? Meaning, if we put one mission here and some mission, you know, the mission that would be oddly placed next to it, where it would belong, you wouldn't give it 2 seconds of thought. Right? Oh, okay, that's a different thing. This is not related. But now that the context of them both next to each other forces you to entertain, well, maybe there is a Hezekri argument here, right? Even if there isn't one. But the fact that you have to entertain that allows you to actually analyze the Gemara more correctly, more fully. And that's part of the development of Torah Shabbat Peh. It's why the Gemara is rough and tumble. It's not so organized, right? It's why the Rishonim actually go, many of them, went out of their way to try to develop systems of organized ways of writing the Gemara, right? The Rif essentially stripped out all of that inconsistency in the Gemara and tried to make it a consistent, organized Gemara. He ripped out all of the Shach Levatari, all the back and forth, all the non-halachic opinions, all the stories. He just throws in only the bottom line. Right, and it's not quite that way, but it's the first attempt at really codifying it in an organized manner to try to avoid the need for that. Now, of course, by comparing the Rif's version to what we have in the Gemara, you know that you can see what he left out and what he thinks is important, what he does not think is important, which tells you how he understood the Gemara. Right, so it's. But again, that's just the same more thinking process. It's designed that way. Okay, that's answer number two. Answer number three. Ibai Zema, Makav, Vinikav, Ikavinayu. It's the distinction is between who's being surrounded, or the surrounder, or the surrounded. Tanakama Savar, Taima Da Amad Nikav, to Megagalim Asakol, that if the inside guy puts up the fourth wall, that's when he has to pay for the full value of everything. Aval Amad Makif, Enil Nosein Lo, Aladame Revias. But if the outside guy puts up the fourth wall, like the other three that he put up, so then he's only chayav to pay for the fourth wall. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Loshna Nikaf, Veloshna Makif. It doesn't matter who puts up the fourth wall. Im Amad Vigadar, Megagalim Asakol, he has to pay for the whole thing. Right? And again, there's obvious weaknesses, because if that's the distinction, so then that's directly contradiction to the first line of our Gemara, which stated a Braisa that said, right, which said, Amar Vidamar Shwalach, Rabbi Yossi, and the Gemara, sorry, not a Braisa, the Gemara itself said, Loshna Amad Nikaf, Loshna Amad Makif. Right? As if that was the standard approach. So it could be that the Gemara is saying that that's for everybody. It could be the Gemara is saying that's only for B.O.C. Right? So again, but there's weaknesses in this answer too. Now the Gemara throws a curveball. Lishna Achrina. Lest you think that the third answer was the only third answer, there's another version of the third answer. Yeah,
what
Nathan.
What would be the logic of saying if the Nikaf
put up the fourth wall?
If the Makif put up the fourth wall, that you'd only have to pay for the fourth wall.
I mean, according to the Tanakhama.
Yeah.
So let's use Hana'a because it's the easiest way to understand this answer, right? So let's assume that the reason why you would have to pay anything when a guy surrounds your field with walls is because you're benefiting from it, mm-hmm. right? What the mechanism of that benefit is, we'll talk about next week. But you're benefiting in some way, right? And because you're benefiting, for some reason, you're going to have to pay. Mm-hmm. So the question is, okay, what's the cause of your benefit? So when you put up the first three walls, I benefited nothing. My field is not protected. The fact that you now put up the fourth wall, and now my field is protected, okay, but what did you do that created the protection for my field? You put up the fourth wall, and therefore you're only bechayav for the fourth wall. Right? That would be the analysis of Tanakam. Rabbi Yossi would say it's ridiculous, because one wall is useless, so you have to consider all four walls together, right? And again, that logic, which is why the Balaam Or probably goes with this, is the same logic of Kamdina versus Hadardina, which is, when you put up the fourth wall, do we look back at what happened previously, even if for 10 years you had three walls and it was irrelevant? And do we say now that there's a fourth wall, all of a sudden these things become relevant again? Or do we say no, what's past is past, bygones are bygones, and the fourth wall is standalone, right? And that's part of the, and that's, again, it's the same logic, even if it's in a different sugya, which is probably why the Balaam Or thought it was appropriate to interpolate that sugya into ours, right? The Ramban disavows this notion, but it's interesting to think about nonetheless. Fine. Lishna Achrina. Makif v'nikaf ika b'nayu. Right? Between the surrounded and the same difference. Okay, what's the distinction? Tanakama Savar im gadar makif esaravias nam im gadar makif esaravias nam yavle. If the makif builds the fourth wall, he has to pay him for the fourth wall also. Verabi Yosi Savar im ama nikaf a gadar esaravias hud yavle. Only the fourth wall he has to pay. Dugali daite denichale. Because it's only when the nikaf pays, builds the fourth wall, that he has to pay for all four of them, because he showed that it's good for him. Avlim gadar makif, lo yavle midi. But if the makif builds the fourth wall, according to Rabbi Yossi, he has to pay nothing. In other words, Tanakama says that the nikaf has to pay the value of the fourth wall, no matter what. Because fundamentally, there's some value that he's deriving from this. Now, there's going to be a very big distinction between the value in answer 3 version 1 versus in answer 3 version 2. Because here we're saying that it's only the value on the fourth wall is built, according to the Tanakama, that you have to build the fourth wall, and specifically not the first 3 walls. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says it's an all or nothing proposition. If the inside guy displays that he's interested in all 4 walls, he has to pay for all 4 walls. If he doesn't, because he never built the fourth wall, he waited for the outside guy to build the fourth wall, he's off the hook completely. He has to pay nothing. Now, those are the 4 possible answers in the Gemara, right? Answer 1, answer 2, and then the 2 versions of answer 3. Now, the Gemara is going to teach us a story which is going to try to tell us what the halacha is in this sugya. This is where it gets complicated, because how to pick which of the answers this story is referring to is where the mess even, it just begins, right? As if you thought it was not messy before, now is where the mess really gets started, okay? So here we go. This is the famous story. It's a famous sugya referred to as Runya in the Elamei Yeshivas. The Yeshivas, you just say to somebody, he's learning the sugya of Runya. They'll know exactly what you're talking about. Runya. Akfe Ravina Me'arba Ruchosav. Runya, who's this guy, turned out he's a poor, relatively poor guy. So Ravina, the Amora, surrounded his field from 4 sides. So Amarle, Havli Kama Degadri. Give me like what I paid for the fence that I put up.
Ravina
said this to Runya. Lo yavle. He didn't give him anything. He said, no, not paying. Havli lefi kanim bezol. So he says to Runya, Ravina says to Runya, Runya, do me a favor. Just give me the value of a cheap fence, the Home Depot fence. Not so expensive. Come on, something, man. Lo yavle. Gives him nothing. Okay, says to him, fine. Havli agar netirusa. At least give me the cost that it would cost you to hire a watchman. Now you don't need to hire a watchman. Lo yavle. He didn't give it to him. Yomachad, one day, have a kagadar dikli. He was harvesting the dates from his palm trees. Amar le larise. So Ravina said to his sharecropper, right, the people who work in his fields, Zil shkol mine kibura daihini. Go and take a bucket of dates from Runya. Now, just stop here for 1 second, right? Is that permitted? Is that permitted? So we don't know, right? Why? So I'll tell you the 2 sides, right? On the one hand, you're not usually allowed to go take other people's property. We generally call that stealing. But if a guy owes you money and he's refusing to pay, so there is a concept in halacha called avid inish dina lenafshe, that sometimes you're allowed to go and take the law into your own hands. So for example, if you know a guy owes you money and he's just refusing to pay, and you know he has assets, so what you can do is you can go and literally take his stuff. And then when he comes to Beis Din and says, that guy took my stuff, Beis Din now has procedural grounds under which to hear the case and leave the money with the person who took it, because it's in repayment for the original debt. In other words, Beis Din can lump the 2 issues, which would have otherwise been seen as unrelated, together. So that's what Ravina is essentially doing. He's saying, of an issue is enough. She's saying, listen, Runya owes me money. Like, everybody agrees. Nobody in the Mishnah thinks that if I built a fence on 4 sides, he doesn't owe me anything, except for the Rabbi Yossi's position in version 2 of the answer 3, right? So at this point in the Gemara, it seems like Ravina doesn't care about that approach, right?
So Ravina is playing judge, jury, and expert.
Yeah, well, he wrote the Gemara, so he could do whatever he wants.
Well, that's what,
right?
I'm done with the Gemara now.
Exactly. It's a fun sugya. So wait, so keep going. It gets more complicated. So Azal La'asuye. So the sharecropper went to bring that bucket. Rama Bekala. So Runya said, no, stop it. You can't take my stuff. So Amar Lay, so Ravina said to Runya, great. Galitza daitcha demenach nichalacha. Right? You showed that the wall is good for you. Why? Oh, we're going to come... Lad. We're not going to get to it today. I promise we're going to go through slowly, slowly. We're going to try to come up with a mahalach for all the major approaches in the Rishonim, the Ramban, the Rama, Tosis, Rashi, Rashbam, everybody. We're going to try to go through all of it. But let's just get the story down. Okay? You show that it's good for you, right, to block, to have a protection, right? Because you're trying to stop my guy from taking the stuff. So if you're concerned that people are going to take your stuff, it shows that you actually want your stuff to be protected. It's not that you don't care about your stuff. You want the protection. So lo yehei ela izaba alma. Milo bai netirusa. If it was only goats that I owned, not a sharecropper, right? You would not need the fence to protect against the goats eating your dates, right? So alachas kama v'kama, my sharecropper coming to take the stuff that I should think is rightfully mine. Now, did Ravina really want the stuff, or did he really just want to prove that Runya is deriving value, right? That's part of the question here, right? Okay. So what does Runya say, ingenious? Amar lei, iza ba'alma lav la'achlu yebai. Nah, I'm not worried. Goats don't come to eat my dates. So Amar lei, v'lo gavra ba'es t'mechlila? Ah, but what about people? People do come, so you're going to benefit from the fence. So then, at this, Runya had no answer. So asa l'kamei de Rava, they came to Rava, and Rava says, Amar lei. So Rava says to Runya, Zil.
Did Rava and Ravina live at the same time?
Well, there were multiple Ravas and there were multiple Ravinas. So the answer is probably, but it depends on which one you're referring to. Well, Ravina's are pretty late. Rava's also pretty late, but not usually as late as Ravina. But there's at least seven different Ravas. So it's not like a hard thing to imagine. It's also very possible that it's not Rava. It could be Rabba. It could be Rabba Bar of Yosef. It could be a number of different Ravas. There are a bunch of Ravas that were also very late. All possibilities, fine. Amarle, zil paise b'may de'ifayas. Go and pay him for what he said he was willing to accept, which at the end of the day was the value of a watchman. Or maybe it means the bucket of dates. Right, we're not sure. V'ilo, and if you don't, da'inin alecha dina k'ravhuna liba de'rav Yossi. I'm going to paskin according to Ravhuna like Rav Yossi, which was the very first answer that the Gemara gave, which is what? Hakolafi mashagadar. The full value of half of the fence. Which is significantly more than any of the interpretations that the Gemara gave ultimately.
Just either accept this basic solution or I'm going to impose the maximum solution.
Exactly. So now, welcome to the party. Because...
Wait, why do you have to say it's only according to the first version, not one of the other remaining...
Because what's the other... who in the other version says Hakolafi mashagadar? Nobody. Right, that's the whole Gemara. It's Bishlam the Rav Huna, right? Saying it's the first interpretation of the Gemara, right? So just before we even get into whether or not, right, what is Rava doing here, right? Well, let's get into that first, right? Problem number one, right, at face value. Rava could look at a halachic question in front of him and say, pay him or I'm going to make you pay the most. Okay, so what is that? How does that work? What's the law?
Well, that's what's so strange about it.
Exactly, right? Mechatesi, that Beis Din ever has the right to just make up what they want the halacha to be on the spot. Like, I think, now, it happens to me, Beis Din does have that power. We do have that. It's called Makim Oji Shalom, and I did.
Or what he's saying is that we know that there is a solution, but the law isn't settled on this. You know, there's not an absolute solution. If any of these halakhically are acceptable, I'm going to impose the most extreme.
Even if you're right. Saying, fine, let's assume that that's true. Okay, so then how do you explain this?
It's like in prison, like your prison terms, you can have 8 to 30 years. I'm going to
right.
Have 8 to 30 years.
Fine, so good. That works in the story of Runya. So now I'm just going to ask you very simply. Okay, so can you explain to me how that works in the first half of the Gemara where we're trying to actually come up with the halacha of the Mishnah? What's the Mishnah teaching me? If you're right, then what's the Mishnah telling me? Saying at the end of the day, the Mishnah is a ruling.
Right.
Right? So what's the ruling? It can't be seven rulings. It's got to be one. Maybe it could be two. Maybe it could be a machokes. Okay, so and how do we adjudicate? Saying even if you're going to tell me that within the context of the real case in front of Rava, you have latitude... But that doesn't work. Then the story is contradicting the Gemara.
So I have a solution then.
Which is?
What was troubling me about the whole story to begin with?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, the first guy is Rockefeller and the second guy, you know, is this poor Shlemiel.
Right.
And the Rockefeller is imposing his solution on the poor Shlemiel.
Right.
So the Gemara is basically saying what I really want you guys to do is there is an obligation. And I want you to kind of figure out what's the fair obligation given, frankly, your different economic situation against each other. It can be X to Y. And if you're not going to settle on something, then it can be either, you know, an extreme. So it's basically saying, We're going to look at each situation. We're going to recognize sort of what the relative capabilities are of one party against another, what the relative value of what's on the property against another, whether someone's goat herding or whether someone's raising dates. In other words, look at it all.
Spoken like a true mediator. Yeah. Saying, which is fine, except that is this court or is this mediation? Saying Basin doesn't usually have the authority to start picking and choosing, saying, well, we think this is the best pshara for you guys. They could opt for pshara, right? That's a choice. But if they opt for din, Beis Din doesn't have the right to start picking and choosing what they want the halacha to be. The halacha is the halacha, right? In fact, Beis Din has to be need blind when we look at two people. In fact, the Gemara says in the Andavav and Masech Sanhedrin, Emes v'mishpat shalom shiftu b'shareichem, and the Gemara learns from that pasuk, I think it's in Mishlei, which means that when the Beis Din looks at two people, they have to look at it need blind. The fact that they have to be mechayev a lot of money to the poor guy is irrelevant. So then the Gemara asks, so if you're going to be mechayev a poor guy $1 million, he can't pay. So how is that emes u'mishpat shalom? Where's the shalom? So the Gemara says that Beis Din is supposed to help him pay. Beis Din should pay out of their own pocket to cover his debt. Paskin the halacha, and then the community should help him make sure that he pays his debt. That's the shalom. But the point of that is that it's not so easy to just assume that Rava has the right to just say, well, take his offer or I'm going to paskin the crazy one. Is that like a threat? Is that a punishment? Is that he's telling you, well, this is not in front of me, but if you would have came in front, like what's the genesis of this conversation here, right? Then there's the second question, which is, well, is Runya really a poor guy, right? Can Runya actually afford to pay or is he just a cheap guy? Right? What's the deal? Now, the next Gemara is also complex. It's a different halacha, so we're going to leave it separately, but there are those who interpret Runya's story with the next story, which is also about Runya, and that Runya is poor in the next sugya, and therefore we have to assume he's poor here too. And therefore, that should also change the way in which we approach this. Maybe. Again, but it's complicated, right? So depending on where we analyze this to give Runya and how we take it back and plug it back into the Gemara, that's going to change everything. Now, secondly, just the way that the Gemara phrases this, when Rava tells him, "Da'inin ala chadina k'rav huna liv d'rav Yosi," right? Is that a threat or is that because that's the halacha? Right? If you're going to tell me that it's a threat, so that actually fits very nicely with the previous Gemara. Why? Because that's not really the halacha. Right, the halacha is going to be one of all of the various interpretations the Gemara tried to come up with. Because if the Gemara didn't really think the halacha was like Chiyah Barav, that's about to make Kanan Bezol, so then why is it bothering to try to come up with 9 better explanations? Who cares? It's just wrong. So the Gemara says, the Gemara adds this all the time. You have a two of Mahalchim and Nachron in the Amoraim. Amor 1 says one thing, the Amor B says the other thing, and we pass like Amor 1. No. He had the right pshat. We don't need to go through the whole explanation of the other guy's side. He had a pshat. It doesn't work out so well. Who cares? But the whole Amud is talking about that guy's pshat. So why are we doing that if it's so obvious that the halacha is like Rav Huna, right? In which case, so then that implies that Rav is just threatening him. Okay, but if Rav is just threatening him, so then what does that tell us about the whole story? Was this a real din Torah? Was this really Avad Inish Dino Lanafshe? Did this come in front of him? Does this have anything to do with our sugya altogether? Maybe the story is loosely related, and that's why the Gemara put it here, but maybe it has nothing to do with anything, right? So these are the challenges that we're going to have to try to now work through based on whichever mahalak we look at. So next week, God willing, on Wednesday, because we're out of time, on Wednesday next week, what we're going to do is we're going to take the various mahalakim of the Rishonim, and we're going to try to plug it back into the steps of the Gemara and see how do we look at the context of both the analysis of the sugya itself and the story of Runya and fuse the two of them into a somewhat cohesive approach based on the various approaches that the Rishonim have. Stop here.